I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This holiday season, choose gifts that feel thoughtful and practical with Omaha Steaks. Whether you're hosting or gifting, they deliver the world's best steak experience, and it makes you look like you planned way ahead. They've got USDA-certified tender steaks, juicy burgers, comfort meals, and tons more. Gifting Omaha Steaks is honestly one of the easiest wins. Everything arrives beautifully packaged, super convenient, and the quality is unbelievable. Their filet mignons are some of the most tender I've ever had. And the variety means you can personalize every gift. Plus, orders placed by 6 p.m. Eastern ship same day. And everything is backed by their 100% guarantee. It's holiday gifting made simple. Save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their Sizzle All The Way sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code T-Bone at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com, code T-Bone.
And we are coming to you live from the Quicken Loans Studios, National Mortgage Lender, Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. It's the Ken Carmen Show on CBS Sports Radio, 855-212-4CBS. I got to admit something here. We were supposed to have Ross Tucker at some point. Now, it's not Ross Tucker's fault, because we got a chance to talk to Ross Tucker. But what we said to Ross Tucker, basically, how do I put this here, Hickey? Everything he said was like echoey because the system was all broken down and messed up. We've had a lot of problems technically here today at CBS Sports Radio. And so we were supposed to have Ross Tucker on, and basically it's an unusable interview. And so we weren't going to have Ross Tucker on. I went, oh, well, okay. And I just went, hey, coming up next, Peter Schwartz joins us, a little bit of this and a little bit of that. On a scale of 1 to 10, how embarrassing? Peter, how embarrassing is that tease?
To me?
I mean, I have been doing radio with you for 3 years.
Yes.
We're on the national network.
Yes.
And could you imagine some idiot, you're driving around in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. Hey, coming up next, a little bit of this and a little bit of that on CBS Sports Radio. Why, you got my attention.
Well, it's not like you're bringing in the janitor, you're bringing in a voice on the network.
Well, that's true. I know. Because it's like I no-sold you, because at first I went, oh, we got a lot to talk about. We got his son's bar mitzvah.
Yeah.
That we're going to mention.
I feel bad for Ross. He's good at what he does. Whoa.
Ross is good. What?
Yeah. I like
good
the music.
You should like the music. Yes. I picked it out just for you, baby.
Thank you.
So wait a minute now. We have Bradley. Is Bradley the one who became
Bradley.
A man?
Yes, Bradley. 2 weeks ago last night.
2 weeks ago last night? Are you kidding me?
2 weeks ago, yeah.
So, okay, I've been, you know, I have Jewish family members.
Uh-huh.
I've been to everything but a bar mitzvah.
Uh-huh.
Been to the wedding, been to the whole deal. So he goes up there and what? He reads Torah?
So yeah, so the first hour is the ceremony, and he does his... you know, it's called a Haftorah. It's a portion of the Torah he has to read. And the services are led by the cantor. And she did a wonderful job teaching him everything he needed to do.
Very nice.
And he did a superb job. It's not a very easy thing to do, to read that scripture out of, you know, directly without certain vowels and everything that he learned how to read it with. So he did a really good job. He did.
Now, you obviously, you remember your bar mitzvah?
I have a vague recollection of it.
Vague?
It was not. No, I remember it, but to be completely honest, you know, the bar mitzvahs today are so different than they were back when I was bar mitzvahed, which was in 1980. I mean, you just, you know, you dumped a whole bunch of family into the temple. Then you went to the party where it was. There was no theme. Like,
we
now everybody's got a theme. Yeah. Planet Bradley. So if you drop
Judas
Bradley,
Priest.
If you drop Bradley on his own planet, what would he have with him? So each table at the reception had a portion of Planet Bradley, whether it was the Mets table or it was the Islanders table or the Jets, Madden, Xbox, iPhone, headphones. Under Armour was one of the tables too.
He likes Under Armour.
Oh, big Under Armour. If he ever becomes a professional athlete, that'll be his first endorsement.
So I take it he's not very Team Kaepernick, I take it. Okay.
You didn't have to go there, but okay.
All right. I saw the photo with you and your family. You guys look beautiful.
Oh, thank you very much.
I mean, you guys look
a lot of preparation.
Beautiful.
Thank
you. My God. Honestly, how many, like, how long do you have to plan for these? How many years out?
We've been at it really probably for a year and a half, 2 years.
Holy
I think
God.
I think we booked where it was about a year and a half ago or so. I think when we had an initial conversation. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Wow.
And Bradley's been getting lessons for 3 years.
So it's how old is Bradley now again?
He'll actually be 13 next Sunday.
He'll be 13.
So that's technically in the Jewish calendar. His bar mitzvah 2 weeks ago was his birthday.
So wait a minute. How old's Jared?
Jared is 8.
So he starts what next year?
He's going to start next year, and we're going to start the whole process all over again.
Oh man,
we're going to start a GoFundMe page for the next one after what we spent on this one.
Oh, I don't even want to know. I don't even want to know.
So, if management is listening, I'll take as many shifts as possible.
Come on, folks.
4.5 years.
Come on. You're only bar mitzvahed once. Come on, Mark. You know, baby. Come on. Great Peter Schwartz. Fantastic.
Thank you.
Okay, let me ask one more question.
Sure.
Did somebody get him boggle?
No one got him boggle.
Come on. How did no one get him boggle?
A lot of cash.
Oh, I hope so.
It was a tremendous fundraiser. Yes, it was. Not in mom and dad's pocket. That was a withdrawal in the biggest way possible.
But he's 13, or he's going to be 13. He's becoming a man real quick. And I know you got to go. But do you guys look over the funds, or does he look over the funds?
Because this was the arrangement we made with him.
All right.
The money is his, and he has the ability to purchase one large item and one small item within a month after the bar mitzvah.
Beautiful.
Once that is done, the remainder of the funds are going to be placed in an account where he won't be able to touch it for a while.
See, that's the smart thing.
Unless his right hand snapping the football gets him a scholarship, that money's going to need to be used for something else down the road.
You never know.
We're going to see.
You never know. Mitchell Schwartz, Jeff Schwartz. I mean, you got good football players.
He's got some good football, you know, in his body. I mean, he played for Team USA over the summer, so we'll see what happens.
Peter, beautiful as always. Beautiful bar mitzvah. Your family looks beautiful. All the best, buddy. We love you.
Thank you.
Peter Schwartz, fantastic as always. I wasn't going to tell Peter. Hickey, you ready for this?
I'm ready.
When I was a kid, my buddy down the street, Danny, because the Catholics, you know, they have the first communion and everything and the whole deal. And he got, you know, you get the communion money. And he had, it was over $1,000, like cash in his hand. And in our neighborhood, I swear to God Almighty, he comes up to our houses and he goes, hey. And it was him and his brother, Matt. He goes, hey, we're going down to Dairy Mart. I go, okay. So we all go down to the Dairy Mart there. Do you guys have Dairy Marts out in New York?
No, we have Dairy Queen.
No, Dairy Queen's a restaurant. Dairy Mart is what's a convenience store? Name the best convenience store you have out there.
7-Eleven.
All right, so it's like a 7-Eleven, except it's Dairy Mart. He goes, they're losing Dairy Marts now. But he goes, we're going to a Dairy Mart. I says, okay. So we go down the street to the Dairy Mart. He takes the cash. He puts it on the counter. I swear to God. And he goes, give me all the pogs you got in the building. He bought like $1,000 worth of pogs, knickknacks, everything you could possibly get with $1,000 from Dairy Mart. Walks home. We're playing with the Pogs. We're checking out the Pogs. Pogs were like, there were these stupid things. See, I have to explain everything because you're basically 10 years old. I'm not even old and I have to explain this stuff. Pogs were basically, it's like Magic the Gathering cards, except they were circular and Pogs. That's what they were called. Okay, Hickey, you following?
Yes, I was going to ask for an explanation.
Exactly. So basically, he buys all these knickknacks, like these like toy cars, bought basically an entire shelf of candy, and bought as many Pogs as $1,000 could get him. His dad freaks out and had to go back to the Dairy Mart with all the stuff that he had left and try to get back everything from the manager. And the manager's like, what happened here? And he had to march his son in there and goes, one of your idiot tellers let this little boy come in here with $1,000, put it on the counter. Danny, what did you say to him? I said, give me all the Pogs you can give me. Told him, give me all the Pogs you can give me. You sold him $1,000 worth of You didn't realize, didn't understand why a preteen kid had $1,000 in his hand? Guy is screaming at the person behind the counter. Goes, let me go get the manager. Tells the manager, and the manager's like, just fine. Here's a lot of the money. But gave him like $900 back. Had to go back and do that. Hickey, were you bar mitzvah or did you do communion?
Communion. I was one of those Catholics that you talked about.
What? Is that how I said it?
Yeah. It was funny. I enjoyed it.
Gosh, did I sound like that bad when I said it? Like one of them Catholics over there.
They're one of them Catholic boys.
I didn't mean it like that. McKeon, are you Catholic?
Yeah, I'm also one of those Catholics.
One of them there Catholics. Judas Priest, I'm sorry. What'd you get for communion money?
I don't exactly remember the price. I was like 10.
So how much did you get? You ballpark it. What'd you get?
I'd like to guess maybe 1,000.
1,000 bucks?
I don't know, Ken. I was like maybe 8.
What'd you get, Ryan?
I mean, same. I mean, I'm 10 years old. It's pretty generous.
How do you not remember
grade.
The first
You're
1,000 you
grade.
Make from communion?
And
it
my
doesn't
parents
matter.
Made sure I didn't see that money either.
So
for
but
that reason,
st-
so I don't take it to go to the 7-Eleven.
I don't care. Well, that's obviously the truth. You don't give them any of the money. Second of all, though, what I'm saying is, for a second grade kid, a lot of money is like 15 or 20 bucks in their hand. They go, my God, what am I going to do with all this money? And so they didn't tell you at all what money you had? They just was like, oh, we're taking this and this is it. They didn't tell you at all?
My parents would take it and then they'd give me like 60 bucks and be like, here, go buy a video game. And that would be all I needed. That was all I cared about.
Oh, my God. That's not... Come on. You need
what do you want a 10-year-old to buy? A car?
You didn't know. I'm not saying that, but they at least had to tell you.
Yeah, they told me we got money for you. This portion of it's going to the bank, and you're going to get this portion, and it's going to go to whatever fund you want for a video game. And $60 back then is $1,000,000 to you.
See, I'm just a regular Protestant dweeb. I didn't get any of that stuff.
Oh, you're one of them Protestants.
Yeah. One of them, they're Protestants. I didn't get any sort of money until I graduated high school. I graduated college. I got nothing. Like, we had a graduation party. It was worthless. And then when I got married, we got a lot of money for when we got married. We had it out in Youngstown. But I actually had blood relatives. I hate to admit this, but I love admitting it. I had blood relatives who didn't give me anything for my wedding. You can believe that?
How? How do you walk in empty-handed?
Drove out to Youngstown, ate my food, the whole thing. Nothing. Didn't give me nothing.
No way you still speak to them.
I still speak to him.
How? That's an unforgivable sin.
Nah, it's really not. I just don't understand why you drive an hour to Youngstown, an hour east of Youngstown, eat the food, do the whole partying thing. The booze was free for them. I know. I'm the one who paid for it. My in-laws paid for basically everything else. My parents gave me a couple grand. And then that was it. I remember the chair covers were freaking $900. And I had a couple of aunts and uncles. Didn't give me anything. And it wasn't like they're poor either. I was very surprised.
If I got invited to a wedding where like they were like kind of friends but not really, didn't really know them, I would still feel weird walking in without a gift.
Yeah,
so
you
the fact
still
that
give,
family members walked in.
Yeah,
a gift
you case. Still give, you still get like money, and you know not everybody's bathing in it. Obviously, you know, 20 bucks, 30, whatever. You still give something. I mean, good God, it's like 40 a plate. I don't know. Not that I like to call him out. 855-212-4CBS. Coming up at 11:40, Bob Glauber going to join us, NFL columnist for Newsday, author of Guts and Genius. Coming up next, three up, three down. Bradley Schwartz, he's up. He's a man. And no one got him Boggle. It's Ken Carmen on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
This is the Ken Carmen Show. Who's trending up? Who's sinking down? It's time to find out on Three Up, Three Down with Ken Carmen here on CBS Sports Radio.
Hit it.
Who's up?
Baker freaking Mayfield. Hickey, 9 touchdowns, 1 interception since Hugh Jackson got canned. On the field today, Hugh Jackson was on the sidelines. Baker Mayfield, 4 touchdown passes. Browns won 35-20. They're now 4-6-1. Are they going to make the playoffs? No. Are they still a particularly good team? No. But they're starting to make some hay the best way they possibly can. And what Baker Mayfield said after the game, and some people drew a little bit of umbrage with it, took a little bit of umbrage with it, Kerr. Hugh Jackson, just a couple of weeks after he got fired, ended up going to the Cincinnati Bengals and was a special assistant to Marvin Lewis and will be a special assistant to Marvin Lewis for the rest of the season. And according to Jason Lockenfora, might end up being the head coach of the Cincinnati Bengals next year. One, for Cincinnati, I pray that he's the head coach next year. I absolutely pray. Second, regardless of whether you like it or not, or regardless of whether it's even fair or not, because you can look at this and say, hey, he ain't doing anything. He got fired. He still wants to work. He still wants to be a coach. You can't have a problem with that. That's a perfectly fair and reasonable take. But again, we have to try to live in Baker Mayfield's world. One, he's always going to have a chip on his shoulder. He's always going to take things immensely personal. The other thing, he needs to get guys to rally the troops. He needs to get guys to rally around him and do what he does. And being around the Cleveland Browns for a long time, I'll tell you this. Hugh Jackson has done nothing for the Cleveland Browns over the last three years other than provide them an excuse. And Baker Mayfield, while he might not be thinking about this consciously, needs to get those guys to rally around him and rally around each other and to stop worrying about old football coaches and stop worrying about giving them hugs on the sidelines and before and after a game and things like that. So Baker Mayfield's tact, while harsh, is the right way, the right thing to do for himself and a Cleveland Browns football team that has been garbage for the past 20 years. He has to do it this way. It's the way he knows to do it. And he has to make an enemy out of a former coach. Next.
Who's down?
Jim Harbaugh. I said it before, I'll say it again. You have made yourself the John Cooper of Michigan football. Great record. You've done a great job with Michigan. But you had it right there in the palm of your hands. You were supposed to kick the ass of Ohio State, reclaim Big Ten dominance, put yourself in the college football playoff. We think of Northwestern as an afterthought. Sorry, Pat Fitzgerald. Sorry, Wildcat fans, the one of you that are listening out there. We're apologizing, but it's the truth. That's the way you're thought of right now. It's up to you to change it. But for Michigan, you were supposed to do those things. Oh, and by the way, Urban Meyer, there was a question about whether or not he was going to come back next year. Then they don't just lose. They give up 62 points, and they lose by 3 touchdowns. 0-4. While you're 10-2 and you've been much better over the last few years and you finally got yourself a system that's workable and you finally got your players, you got Chase Wimbush, you got guys who care about it on defense, you lose that game and it all goes away. And all of those previous things that people like me were shutting up about while you were beating the brakes off of Penn State, while you were beating the brakes out of Wisconsin and Michigan State, it all comes back because you didn't win the game that mattered the most and you're still the afterthought in the Big Ten. Not where you're supposed to be, which is what makes it a tremendous disappointment. This isn't quite the equivalent of 1969. It's damn close. You were supposed to have a coronation yesterday. It turned into a bloodbath. Next.
Who's down? Who's up?
Who's up? Yeah, you almost got that one mixed up, didn't you there, buddy boy? Who's up is Russell Wilson, 6-5 now, and the only reason they're keeping their head above water with the Seattle Seahawks is Russell Wilson. Earlier this year, you had Earl Thomas. He was giving him the bird as he was getting taken off the field. You have a team that's in flux. You no longer have Michael Bennett. You no longer have guys who are veterans on that defense. You're working new players in. You're trying to build that system throughout, and a lot of quarterbacks are tasked with this. There's guys who can get over the hump. They're called elites. There's guys who can't. Joe Flacco, Matt Stafford, those guys. They can't get over the hump when you change that out. There's guys who are. They're elite. Russell Wilson is part of the elite group. He is one of those guys. Next.
Who's down?
The Jaguars. 3-8, you lose to the Bills, and you get in a great big fight and cost your team points during it. That's a lack of discipline. And for a while, I've been looking elsewhere as much as I could other than Doug Marrone. You have lost the locker room, sir. Leaving Blake Bortles, I know that Blake Bortles isn't that good of a quarterback. I'm tired of beating up on Blake Bortles. He is what he is. He's not that great. The Jaguars shot their shot and they missed. He's not that great. He's a bust. Number three overall, that's a bust. But I can only sit there and beat up the quarterback for so long. They have absolutely no discipline. They were one of the biggest trash-talking teams before they were really good last year, and then after they were really good this year, and they've done nothing except fall apart to 3-8. You have Leonard Fournette that when he's either hurt, he's getting in a fight. You have no run game. The defense is falling apart. You're giving up 99 rushing yards to Josh freaking Allen, who's coming back from an injury. You have serious problems, basically out of nowhere, and they're all caused by yourself. Next.
Who's up?
Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck, this is what proves about what a quarterback can do for you. Jim Irsay is a goofball. Jim Irsay has, at times, been a wildfire owner and not a good owner. Andrew Luck covers all that up. Andrew Luck, at the beginning of the season, looked like he was just happy to be alive and playing football, so he was smiling through the losses. Now, he's got Colts fans believing. They've won a ton of games in a row. They have an open door. This is a team that could very well make the playoffs. I don't know about the Ravens. I don't know how much further Lamar Jackson can go. He had a good game this week. I don't want to sit there and besmirch the guy. I don't know how long that lasts. But I know I got something better when I look at Andrew Luck and see that that guy can come back. He's changed the slot. He's got them believing. Eric Ebron is having a renaissance, for crying out loud. And the Colts are back. At 6-5, if they don't make the playoffs this year, it'll end up maybe being a disappointment because they have gotten through the toughest part. And in that division, to be fighting tooth and nail with the Texans, again, it just makes it that much more glaring what the Jacksonville Jaguars haven't been able to do this year. The biggest disappointment in the league, without a doubt. Next.
Who's down?
Clay Helton. I know he got to keep his job. Every week, watch is going to be on Clay Helton next year. And so now you're supposed to try to recruit guys and bring guys into USC. You're supposed to be able to recruit with, and you're USC, so this is where fans put you. You're supposed to be able to recruit with Ohio State and Oklahoma and Clemson and Alabama and Texas and those teams. Michigan, I'll throw them in there as well. You're supposed to be able to recruit with them. And now I'm Clay Helton, and now I got to hit the road and go out and recruit a bunch of guys who don't know if I'm going to be there even by the end of week two next season. And now it's just a ticking time bomb, and it's just a matter of when you're going to get let go. And then for USC fan, now you've just wasted a time. There are prime candidates out there. If you were going to squeeze the trigger, sorry, now's the time to squeeze the trigger. If you're going to keep Clay Helton, for better or for worse, you give him the entire season next year. You can't bend to boosters after this season or beginning of the season if things don't go your way at the beginning of it. You cannot allow your program to do that. You've made your stand. Now you stand there and keep on keeping on. That is three up, three down. A lot coming up a little bit later on. We'll get into the Jim Harbaugh stuff. We'll get into the college football playoffs sounding off. That's going to be a spirited one. And also, this right here. This is why four teams are better than eight in the college football playoff. But next, Bob Glauber going to join us. We'll talk about his new book, Guts and Genius. It's Ken Carman on CBS Sports Radio.
This is the Ken Carman Show.
Back on CBS Sports Radio, Ken Carman until 2 a.m. Eastern, 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. Up, three down, coming up next. But right now, a man who truly needs no introduction. You know, I should say that about everybody, but I don't. That's what makes him special. His name is Bob Glauber. He's the NFL columnist for Newsday, author of Guts and Genius, at Bob Glauber on Twitter, and it's a new book. And it talks about three impeccable gentlemen, guys who are incredible NFL coaches in their own right. And Bob Glauber joins us on the show tonight. Bob, thanks for joining us.
Ken, thanks for having me. I think I'm going to have to retire after that introduction. I'm done. I'm all good. Thank you.
Well, you know, I've ended a lot of careers, so it's not a very good. I was the last guy to host the Hugh Jackson Show in Cleveland, so here we are. So the book is called Guts and Genius. It's so easy to write Guts and Glory, but it still says Guts and Genius. And it says the story of three unlikely coaches who came to dominate the NFL in the 80s. We're talking about Gibbs. We're talking about Bill Walsh. And obviously Bill Parcells, who I don't, you know, Bob, and you probably know better than this, or you probably know better than I do, is what I mean. They seem to come, like Bill Walsh comes from a different background. He's more of a, he seemed to be more intricate in the details and much more of a philosopher. Parcells was really rough and tumble. Gibbs seemed to take a mix of the two there, at least from my point of view. But when you wrote about these three guys, when you go back to what it was in the 80s, one of them has obviously passed on. How did you mix it all together and find out the true essence of each one of these coaches?
Well, that's a good question, and the reason I linked them together, and looking back at NFL history and that decade in particular, I think in a lot of ways that was the golden age of football. Mm-hmm. It's still a great game. There's no question. It's a great sport. It's still very popular, and games are great. But back then, you know, you had it was a different landscape. It, a lot of rivalries. When you were a good team, you stayed good, and you could keep a team together. And to get good was harder in a sense because it took more time to build those teams. So, you know, those guys were unlikely at the time. You know, 1979, you tell me that Bill Walsh, Joe Gibbs, and Bill Parcells are going to be the coaches of the decade and win a combined 8 Super Bowls over an 11-year period. No, people would have said, what are you talking about? Who are these guys? Because really, they're household names now, but in the Hall of Fame. But back then, they were just lightly known and lightly regarded coaches, and they all kind of went through things differently. But what linked them together was not only the competition they had with each other. They played each other a number of times, and a lot of times, whoever won that game would go on to win the Super Bowl that year. But what linked them together was, you know, obviously a belief in their core values and their core systems, but they overcame really difficult beginnings, and they all thought they were going to be fired early on, literally. Mm-hmm. Bill Walsh thought, I'm done. A year and a half in, I think I'm going to get fired, or I don't think I can take this. He actually broke down after a game against Don Shula in Miami where he lost, and he felt he was at fault. He broke down on the team plane and was weeping uncontrollably, and coaches and the general manager, John McVay, they had to kind of huddle around Walsh to prevent the players from thinking anything was wrong. He finally gathered himself and you know, a year and a half later won his first of 3 Super Bowl championships. Joe Gibbs thought he'd be the first coach in NFL history fired before ever winning a game, and Parcells was going to be fired his first season. And it's kind of a remarkable symmetry with those coaches. And they did it differently. You're absolutely right. You know, Walsh was the thinking man's coach, and Gibbs was a bit of a mix of the two. Very physical coach, loved the physical running game, and Parcells was a brute. And you got to play great defense and run the ball and be tough minded. And that's how he won Super Bowls. And those guys really took turns winning each year, just about each year of that decade and into the early 90s. And it was a pretty fascinating time in the NFL.
Bob Glauber joining us on the show. You know, I always try to find the excerpts of Finding the Winning Edge from Bill Walsh, his book, which is basically a Bible to coaches. How much of it did you have to really, not that book in particular, but for Bill Walsh, how much deep diving did you have to do, maybe even in that text or something, to find the type of guy that he really was? And obviously from a personal relationship, you've covered the NFL for a very long time, Bob. So what can you tell me about him personally that we'll find in the book?
Well, what's different about this book personally, and it is the personal stuff. First, you mentioned that book, Finding the Winning Edge, a terrific book, a deep dive into the mind of Bill Walsh. And Brian Billick co-wrote that book with him, and I spoke at length to Brian Billick about just the process of that and how that went. But, you know, there were events that shaped Bill Walsh's life that I do talk about in the book. There was an instance when he was about 11 or 12 years old. He had a pet duck in Los Angeles where he was growing up. His father was a very, you know, tough guy and blue-collar guy, worked on cars, and one day Bill Walsh came home to find his duck was gone. And his father had, Bill Walsh just walked around the house, hey, where's my duck? And the father had it killed, and they ate it for dinner.
Jesus.
And it was, yeah, that's exactly how I reacted to that story. And I'm like, and his son Craig, Bill Walsh's son Craig, is telling me this. And I'm like, oh, my God. And one of the things Craig said was that moment really kind of, it just was like cement in his stomach. He just, even at a young age, he realized, I'm going to have to do this on my own. I'm going to have to kind of go my own way and do everything and live my life on my own. And it's, you know, kind of a heavy thing for an 11 or 12-year-old kid to be thinking that. But, you know, you fast forward, and he was a lonely child. They moved around a lot in California and Oregon. Bill Walsh never really settled down anywhere. In high school, he was a loner. He did like to play sports. He liked to play football, and he liked to box eventually in college. But, you know, those events really kind of shaped him early on. And it also led to a lot of self-doubt along the way. You know, Bill Walsh was a brilliant man, but he was also an insecure man. And a lot of that insecurity kind of showed itself and flared during his career. It was a time early on where he'd confide in Dick Vermeil, the Eagles coach, back in 79 and 80. Yeah. And Vermeil was going through his own thing, obviously, as we know, that, you know, he was burning out. But Bill Walsh would have to call him up in the office, sometimes called him at midnight, and Dick Vermeil is still in the office with his coaches, and he'd have to take a break to talk to Bill Walsh, to basically talk him down from the ledge about how badly things were going. Remember, Walsh was 2-14 his first year. So, you know, I talked to his wife, who Jerry, I don't believe, has really talked much at all about her husband and kind of growing up and going through the experiences in Cincinnati. When Walsh had his formative years as a coach, and was very disappointed when he was passed over by Paul Brown. It really kind of led to the flourishing of the Bill Walsh coaching tree, in a sense. So there were a lot of moments in Bill Walsh's life, the flashpoints that kind of surfaced along the way as, you know, mileposts in his life and in his career. Got to the top, and it was tough for him to stay up there, and it really wore at him, and it burned him out, and it almost destroyed him by the 1988 season. And that's, you know, we're in the 30-year anniversary of that final season of Bill Walsh, and he was a burned out coach at that time, and couldn't go much further, and won a Super Bowl, and then walked out and regretted it pretty soon, and realized that maybe he left too soon, but never did coach another game in the NFL.
Bob Glauber joining us Newsday, author of Guts and Genius, at Bob Glauber on Twitter. It might be tough to pick, but which one of the three stories between him, Gibbs, and Bill Parcells was the one you liked the most?
Well, I found Walsh the most interesting, only because I probably knew less about him than the other two. You know, having covered the Giants for a long time and covered those Gibbs-Parcells battles over the years, I probably knew more institutionally about both Joe Gibbs and Bill Parcells. So it was a learning experience to learn about Bill Walsh, and particularly because he was so unique and so ahead of his time. I found it to be the most interesting and kind of the deep dive in there. And he was a conflicted man in a lot of ways, and it kind of carried through in his career. But then again, you know, I was not able to interview him for the book. I had interviewed him before, you know, when he was alive. But so it was interesting to talk to people about Bill Walsh. And I think a lot of times when you write about something and you don't get to talk to the person or subject you're writing about, it still can be very interesting talking to people about it. I mean, Craig Walsh provided so much insight about Bill Walsh from the time that Bill was an assistant under Paul Brown. Craig was a ball boy, and he saw some stuff that was bad. You know, Paul Brown was a bully in a lot of ways to Bill Walsh, and it impacted him greatly. And, you know, you're the son, you're the ball boy, looking at this stuff, you know, looking at Paul Brown yell at your father as an assistant coach, and it's, you know, it was some unique experiences. So I'd say Walsh, learning about him was the most interesting, but talking to Parcells and Gibbs, priceless. And then getting an audience with John Madden to talk about all three of those guys was one of the biggest treats of my career. It was great. It's like having a private viewing of a John Madden soliloquy right before you, and it was fantastic.
How long did you get to spend with him to talk about those three guys?
Oh, I spoke to him on the phone. He's out in California, so I wasn't able to meet with him, but we spoke for about an hour on the phone. And I, you know, I get I very seldom get nervous interviewing people, but I was nervous for that one. It literally took me a while to settle down. But then, you know, the guy is hilarious. He's talking about the time that he fired Joe Gibbs. They were on a staff at San Diego State together under Don Coryell. He was a defensive coordinator, and Gibbs was a defensive assistant under him. And he wanted to fire him because during an alumni game, Gibbs coached the alumni, and Madden coached the San Jose team, and Madden wanted Gibbs to tell him the plays he was going to run. And Gibbs said, "No, I'm not going to tell you." And Madden says, no, just give me an idea. You don't have to tell me the specific plays." He said, "No, I'm not going to do it." And Madden won the game, and afterward he went to Coryell. He says, I can't work with this guy anymore." So in the end, John said to me, he says, "So I take credit for putting Joe Gibbs on offense, because the next year he was coaching the offensive line at San Diego State." Hilarious stories like that. You go back in time, and Madden is one of the great storytellers of our time or any time. And it was really a treat to kind of hear how he, you know, kind of came across those guys and learned about what made them tick. And he had a front row seat into the minds of those coaches, and he knew them very, very well, and he was able to see what made him great. And that was the ultimate time for John Madden. I think he was really at his peak then, and thereafter in the 90s. He never really lost it to me.
Yeah.
But that was the glory years of football and John Madden, and he was right there to chronicle some great, great games.
Bob Glauber joining us, columnist Newsday, author of Guts and Genius. You can find this book just about everywhere, especially on Amazon. Easy to buy, nice price, good read, good stuff. It only came out about five days ago, so if you got a football fan in your family, an easy buy, and again, a great read for everybody. Bob, out of the three guys, this one's going to be a tough one. Which one do you think would have the most success in say they were 40 years old each, the most mm-hmm. success in 2018 NFL football?
Great question. And I do have an answer. I think it would be Walsh first, Gibbs second, Parcells third. I think Parcells needed too much physicality to kind of go where he needed to go. Although he did kind of trend toward the passing game a lot toward the end of his career, but he needed to bake in the physicality on his team. So I think he would, and you can't do that in today's game.
Yeah.
Gibbs, his mind, maybe the best strategist ever, but he too needed physical football, and you don't see that quite as much. And the reason I put Walsh first is because in many ways, Walsh was the precursor to what we're seeing today in terms of practice. Remember, he was criticized by a lot of people for having light practices. He'd have a lot of walkthroughs and run-throughs with no hitting. And it was not normal at the time. People would say, you got a finesse team and you're not going to be physical enough. But he was right. He preserved the players' bodies like they do today. So I think he'd be the most ready to succeed at this level, given the constraints that you have on practice and the physical element of the practices.
Covering the NFL the way you do, can you name three coaches that closely resemble each of these three coaches in today's NFL?
Oh, that's a really good one. I would say Sean Payton for Joe Gibbs. Brilliant guy, really creative. I would say Sean McVay for Bill Walsh, because I see that West Coast offense that he runs, and I think Bill Walsh. I think Bill Walsh would say, "Son, you are a good coach, my friend." And then for Parcells, I'd probably say maybe, can I go a combination of Belichick and Mike Zimmer, two of his guys,
because
They really kind of have the physicality. Now, Belichick's a brilliant, genius coach. There's no doubt, and he's the most accomplished coach of all time. There's no denying that. But I think him and Zimmer kind of reflect that physical nature of football as much as you can in today's game, and kind of willing teams to win.
Bob, it's exceptional, and I thank you very much for the time. Again, the book, Guts and Genius, the story of three unlikely coaches who came to dominate in the 1980s. Find it on Amazon. Find it at bookstores. Came out just a couple of days ago. Makes a great Christmas gift. You can get it on Kindle. You can get it audiobook. The whole thing. So there's no excuse. You're a football fan. Go get the book. Bob, I thank you very much for the time again. An honor, a pleasure, my friend. Hopefully we get a chance to do it again soon.
Sounds great, Ken. I appreciate the questions. They were very thought-provoking. Appreciate it.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This holiday season, choose gifts that feel thoughtful and practical with Omaha Steaks. Whether you're hosting or gifting, they deliver the world's best steak experience, and it makes you look like you planned way ahead. They've got USDA-certified tender steaks, juicy burgers, comfort meals, and tons more. Gifting Omaha Steaks is honestly one of the easiest wins. Everything arrives beautifully packaged, super convenient, and the quality is unbelievable. Their filet mignons are some of the most tender I've ever had. And the variety means you can personalize every gift. Plus, orders placed by 6 p.m. Eastern ship same day. And everything is backed by their 100% guarantee. It's holiday gifting made simple. Save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their Sizzle All The Way sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code T-Bone at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com, code T-Bone.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.